Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. I'm the only one who can see this, so I'll share this with everybody. Wendy's doing a bizarre robot dance.
That's what this music brings out in me.
Makes you dance like a robot. You're not going to do it the whole show, are you?
Maybe. Something new.
Maybe the Carol Channing imitation while you're doing the robot.
I was criticized by my family. My wife and one of my daughters heard the beginning of the show yesterday where you did a pretty spot-on Carol Channing impression. You've done it in the past. It's always impressive.
Anyone can do
but
it, as
said,
you pointed out.
I ruined it.
You did not. How'd you ruin it?
Because I said that that's one of the two impressions that everyone on the planet can do.
All right, do it.
Bob Dylan. It'll pale in comparison.
Do Carol Channing.
Hello, Dolly.
That's Louis Armstrong.
Oh, it is. Wait, they're different people? I'm just now realizing they're different people. But they said Wendy did a great impression, and then you belittled it. But I just said, like, almost anybody, with the exception of me, as I just proved, can do either a Bob Dylan or a Carol Channing or both. Right?
Yeah,
it used to be.
Right.
Remember, there was a time where everybody would do a Jimmy Cagney impression.
Yeah,
that you dirty rat thing.
Jimmy Stewart.
Everybody would do.
Not everybody could do Jimmy Stewart. You're fantastic.
Oh, well,
I hope your family's listening now. Where I'm the nice one.
No, they said they're not. They're never going to listen again. That was a quote. Direct quote.
Can I tell you that is the one time that I didn't take offense to something you said to me, and they're so worried. They should listen more often.
The first thing they said when I walked in, they go, "What's wrong with you?" I go, "Well, it's only 3 o'clock. We're going to do this all day." They said, "Wendy does this beautiful, great tribute," they said, "to Carol Channing, and then you belittled her."
Well, I have to tell you.
I think we have to hear it again now for people who didn't listen.
Oh,
yesterday.
That's true. People may not have heard.
Diamonds are a girl's best friend.
And you're saying that's not Louis Armstrong?
No.
Okay, do it.
Now do what?
Now do Louis Armstrong so
what,
I can tell
I a
the
monkey?
Difference. Oh, wow. That's painful.
Yeah, that did
that's
hurt.
That's going to hurt.
But I have to admit, you know, I am the woman of many voices. Yes. Not really. Felicia Middlebrooks and like two other people.
Lena Horne.
I'm Lena Horne.
That's pretty good.
Enjoy some woo.
That's a new part. I've never heard that part of it.
I've been working
new
on it.
New for 2019?
I'm opening up for Fred Travellina.
Working on your Lena?
It's
yes,
the Lena Travellina show. That's a great. I would seriously, Wendy. I'm only given $20 a day, but I would spend my $20 on that.
Oh, the Lena Travellina show. I love it. We should get him on the air.
He's dead.
That
is
would be
dead?
A problem.
He's gone.
I don't think Fred Travellina's dead, and if he isn't now,
I still have my $20 from this morning. I'll throw the $20 down on Fred Travellina.
I don't
no longer
like to bet against Bill.
$20.
Sometimes I do.
Look. Fred Travellina died about 4 years ago.
2009.
Oh, that long ago.
Yeah.
That's all right.
They just told me 4 years ago.
Your mileage may vary on death dates.
Yes.
But I think that Carol Channing was the first impression I ever did.
As a small girl, you were doing a Carol Channing impression.
Yeah, because think about it. We were little when we first saw her.
Right. Did you win your grade school talent show with that?
No, I never did it in public.
I just see kids going nuts. That sounds exactly like Carol Channing. Wendy's only in third grade. How does she do it?
I still do my makeup like hers. She had the dark eyes and colored lips, the bright red lips, although I don't do red. But I think that might have been my first impression.
Oh.
That and I beat a thad and I'm 5 years old.
That's pretty good.
One ringy dingy.
That's excellent.
That was more like Paul Lind.
It's all right.
I kind of combined them.
Still very good if my family's listening. I thought that was fantastic.
But really, that might have been, because everybody, she just had this amazing delivery.
Carol Channing did.
And she seemed, to me, I got to tell you, she seemed drunk all the time.
Boy, you know, it's funny you say that because we've mentioned this in the past. There were always performers that seemed, I don't want to say drunk, but they seemed silly. You know what I mean? People like Charles Nelson Reilly and the aforementioned Paul Lind, whenever you'd see them somewhere, they were like, you would go, wow, there's an adult who doesn't act like an adult. They act silly. And I would put Carol Channing in that same kind of pocket, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but she was very slurry. Like, you know, Dean Martin always seemed drunk, which we found out years later.
Just the opposite.
I can't even believe that.
Yeah.
Why would you fake being drunk?
That was just his act. He thought people
would... cocktail pinky ring cigar thing.
Oh, yeah, always at a party. Dean Martin, always holding a martini glass. But the story is that of the guys in the Rat Pack, he was the one whoever, you know, Sinatra would want to be out till 4 in the morning. And he, like at 10 o'clock, he's like, I gotta go to bed. I
that
can't
shocks me.
Stay up with you guys. Yeah, right.
Wow, that's a surprise.
Yeah.
Would we throw Rip Taylor into the silly category?
Without a doubt, Rip Taylor would be the chairman of the silly committee. Yeah.
Where are the silly people these days? I guess Kristen Wiig.
I almost said the White House. I came this close to saying the White House, and I censored myself.
But yeah. She's not that silly when she's being interviewed, right?
That's
right.
True.
But you mean just like when they show up on a panel to talk about something, and they're just...
Cardi B.
She's
out there.
She's close. Bjork. But I guess we're going back a couple years for her. Right?
Yeah, that's true.
They don't make silly people anymore. They stop.
No, they don't. Hey, Nancy has an impression she wants to share. What's going on,
oh,
Nance?
No.
I can do the Munchkins.
Oh, let's hear that.
Ready?
Yeah.
We represent the lollipop kids, the lollipop kids, the lollipop kids.
That's pretty good. Nancy, that's outstanding. Mm-hmm. How have you used this?
Follow the yellow brick road.
And where does this come in handy? Because, Nancy, my impressions don't come in handy either.
Well, you know, follow the yellow brick road sometimes does come into play. You know, when someone says, where are we going? Follow the yellow brick road.
I want to watch the movie with you at my side, Nancy. I think the movie would be three-dimensional to have you there doing the lines from it during the movie.
Can you do a Carol Channing? Because Bill pointed out that everyone except me can do a Carol Channing.
That is my only impression. I'm a one-trick pony.
That's pretty good, though.
It's a good pony. That's
excellent. Thank you, Nancy. Have a great day.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you very much.
She was saying lollipop kids.
It's Guild.
It is Guild. I didn't want to... I mean, she was mid-impression.
No, because your family will yell at you.
Family's already mad at me for yesterday.
All right.
Only make it worse.
So Bertrand does Andy Kaufman.
When I was a kid.
Let's hear it.
Can I hear that, Steve?
Oh, thank you very much.
That's
sorry. Right.
Wendy,
it was better when I had a higher voice. Really good, I had a higher voice.
How high was it?
Wow.
What are your... You do Jimmy Stewart dead on. You do Jimmy Stewart better than Jimmy Stewart does Jimmy Stewart.
But sadly, legally, I can only do it during the holidays. Once the holidays are over, I can no longer do Jimmy Stewart. Do you remember we used to do when at Q101, I would do Jimmy Stewart in heaven, and anytime a celebrity died, we would go to Jimmy Stewart, who would be welcoming them into heaven, and he would write a poem, and then our bosses got very upset about that.
We should bring that back.
That's so funny, because Rod Sierra used to do that here with Kathy and Judy. And
really?
And he was
serious?
Cesar, he was Cesar Romero.
Oh, that's even better.
and when people would die, and people would just get so upset, because... Yeah. You know, he'd do it like that
day. Why would people get upset?
Our bosses said it was morbid.
Well, and you're kind of having, it's too soon.
Right.
Well, Jimmy Stewart had been dead for quite some time.
Jimmy had, but then when a celebrity had just passed away and he was there talking about them being welcomed into heaven.
Showing them around the drinking fountains and things like that.
Right. That's where it gets dangerous.
I'm not listening to anybody anymore.
You're done?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's just do what we want.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. We're talking about... No, I'll be honest. I don't know what we're talking about. It started out as one thing. It became another thing.
It started out as your family being mad because you were not happy with my Carol Channing impersonation.
No, I thought it was a very good one, but then after you did it, and it was. You do a great Carol Channing impression, but then afterwards,
I said... Oh, you pointed out that anyone can do it.
Everybody does an impression of Carol Channing or of Bob Dylan.
That was the nicest slam you've ever given me.
Oh,
I mean, I didn't even notice it was a slam.
It was subtle.
I will slam myself.
Should I leave the room? I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Sure, if you do it, it's fine.
Won't take me that long. What author did we have on? And there was something where I got the word impersonation and impression wrong about John Lennon. Remember? I made a big fool of myself.
Yes.
I remember that.
Yes.
But I don't remember the details other than I was an idiot.
It said there was an author who had written a book about rock music, and it said, you'll discover his impressions of John and Yoko. And you said, I understood you do a great impression of John and Yoko. And he just kept laughing. You didn't know what
And I wasn't being funny. Right. I just kind of used that word incorrectly. Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. I throw myself under the bus. John is on the line, and he has an impression. I feel like we're, you know, America's Got Talent is on the air right now.
This is what Rich Little's house is like every day, Wendy. Every day.
It certainly would be a lot more interesting if you just got to talk in different voices all day long.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would. What impression do you do?
Sitting next to me, I've got Mickey Mouse. I'll put him on the phone for you real quick. Oh, hi, Bill and Wendy. How are you today?
That's not really good.
Wendy!
I'm sorry.
Your family's going to be mad at you.
John, really?
I thought that was good.
That's okay. Look, all I know is that little children enjoy Mickey Mouse, and my daughter seems to enjoy this one, and so it's as close as I think most people can get, getting their voice this high.
Oh, boy. Who's that supposed to be? I can't even figure out who that's supposed to be.
It's supposed to be you, Mickey, but it's not very good.
It doesn't sound like me.
John. What do you think that's
on the drawing board?
Uh-oh.
Did Mickey just bark?
Yes. You know, when you hear Mickey Mouse bark, right, things have gone horribly wrong.
John, man. I'm glad your daughter likes it, and keep doing it.
All right, thanks, guys. Great show. Have fun.
Bye,
thank you. We are having
fun. He just crushed his dreams.
That would, come on. Will you be honest?
Crushed a man's dreams.
Poor guy.
His daughter.
He had to have confidence in it. He called to share it with you.
He was on hold for like 10 minutes,
yeah,
too.
Practicing.
I can't do Mickey Mouse.
Don't try to be nice now.
No, that one's tougher. Because as Bill pointed out, everyone can do Carol Channing.
Carol Channing doing Mickey Mouse?
My husband can do Mickey Mouse.
Can he?
He does it to my grandchild all the time.
Is he home? Can we call Steve?
Yeah, he probably is.
I think we should call him.
He'll probably be embarrassed.
He'll be furious with you, Mary, if we put him on the spot like that.
That's the goal of this week, to get everybody's family member mad at us.
I'm winning so
far. Yes, you are.
I'm the leader in that
All
division.
All right, Charlie Sheen.
That's fun.
All right, some people who do great celebrity impressions. You have your impressionists. I still like that Lena Travelina show, but they're both...
That would be strong.
Maybe that's going on in heaven right now.
We'll have to ask Cesar Romero.
How does he sound?
Cesar Romero? Well,
that's the beauty of doing someone like Cesar Romero. It doesn't
Nobody's
really matter.
Sure.
I guess,
right.
Yeah.
Nobody's sure. One day, Fred Travellina, this is years ago, there was a time where Fred Travellina was really, really popular.
Huge.
Right?
Yep.
You remember that. All right. So Fred Travellina is on Dinah Shore Show, and he's being his typical Fred Travellina. He's just, you know, he's cutting it up, and everybody's loving him, and he's doing all the everybody's loving it. So then Dinah Shore, she's laughing at something. She goes, Fred, when did you discover that you could do all these fabulous impressions? And he gets really, really serious, and he says, as a child, I didn't have any friends. There was nobody to talk to, so I had to invent voices of people to converse with. Like, really serious. And Dinah, look, I'm 11. I'm watching at home. I'm about to cry.
Yeah, was she crying?
Dinah just turned pale white. Like, wow, I thought that answer would have a funnier finish, but it really didn't. It was horrible.
That's so sad.
So sad.
I have a moment like that. My brother and sister are both older than me, so I was like an only child for a while. So I used to play Chinese checkers by myself.
Just you playing Chinese checkers?
I always won.
What if you didn't? Wouldn't that be tragic?
And that's when the beauty of a game, Perfection, came out, and I needed no one. I just tried to beat my time every
year. Oh, yeah, that's better. That's easier.
Yeah, I had little imaginary friends, too. Just Leah Brandschmidt, and Oreo Lekas, of course.
But so you would
Oreo
set up...
Oreo Lekas?
Yeah, don't ask Steve.
That was Leah Brandschmidt's cousin. Come on, that's creative when you're a little kid.
No, it is.
And it's because late, and I made up the story. My mom's like, where were you? And I said, well, Carol Bronstetter's cousin is Leah Brandschmidt. She's visiting in town, and her cousin Oreo Lekas was there, and we were all at the library.
What nationality is Oreo Lekas?
I don't really know.
I think it's got to be Greek.
It's got to be
Greek.
Yeah.
Probably.
So
but
you had imaginary, you figured out familial relationships,
yes,
and backgrounds.
And great names. And come on, what mom is going to be mad at you for being late if you're at the library?
No, it's, that part's true.
The wheel was always turning.
They didn't question nobody
has.
Yes,
my mom laughed right in my face, but she went along, like, she goes, oh, where's Leah Brandschmidt from?
Right, good question.
Like Michigan.
Oh, even better answer.
Yeah.
I think Gillette's making a commercial about people like you next.
Can I tell you I love that commercial? Can we talk about that?
We can't because John Williams is already, you know, he's first thing this morning, John Williams says, you guys aren't talking about the Gillette commercial,
are
you?
We meant to talk about it yesterday.
I said, we're not going to talk about it. He goes, good, because my promo. In his promo, he mentions that they're going to talk about the Gillette ad. And then on Steve Cochran's show, Ro came in and they did a half an hour on it. So even though there's a lot to talk about, I think we should steer people towards John Williams today in the afternoon. It's in his promo.
That's not fair.
No. What do you want to say? Say what you want to say about
no,
it. No,
I...
No, go ahead.
I mean...
What do you want to say about it? Go ahead. You can.
We were supposed to talk about it yesterday, and right. if we did, John would have still talked about it.
Yes.
Because everyone has a different take on
right.
things.
Right, right, right. I agree. But it's in his promo. He's doing the whole show. He's got 2 hours on it. Bringing in people from Gillette.
He's actually going to do an hour on the stream today.
Yeah.
On it.
A bonus hour.
Whatever.
No, go ahead.
No, I feel fine. Bad. Hey, whatever.
No, I think you should be able to talk about it.
Are you for it or against it? You've obviously seen the ad. Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know why people are bent out of shape about it.
Because it takes a dig at what is perceived to be the manliness of a man.
See, and I'm surprised, Wendy, you don't take an issue with it because you're very protective of your sons and the way that they are, you know.
It's a commercial.
Right, right. And I don't see, I've seen it twice. I don't see anything wrong with it. I think it's a good thing. What a man used to be, that guy pretending like he's a lumberjack 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, those days are over, but there are people who think that those days should not be over.
So you like it, Bill?
I do. I like it very much.
And I think it was made by an eighth grader.
Really?
All right. Well, more on this coming up on John Williams' show. There.
Yeah,
cross
that was
promotion.
Good. Yeah, that
got
was
it out
excellent.
Of my system. All right, good.
All right.
Quick
all right.
break?
Yes, a quick break. And then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Steve.
One button. You have one button.
You make it sound easy. It's not easy. You got to know when to hit it. You got to know when to unhit it. Who's got the time? I'm Bill. That's Wendy. This is Bill and Wendy. If you want to participate, 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you. You can call us or text us. That's up to you. Wendy, I don't pretend to understand what goes on with the crossing guards. All I know is they do a tremendous service. They make our streets and our crossways safe so the children can attend school every morning.
Yes.
Every day as I'm driving in, there's a couple of intersections I come to where there are crossing guards, and I applaud them. It's a thankless task.
I, too, pass a couple of crossing guards on my way to work, and some are nice and some are not. And
what's the, you mean just in the way they treat you or the way they treat the kids that they're helping?
The way they treat drivers
oh.
that don't obey their stop signs.
Oh.
But, you know, it wasn't me, but I watched somebody else almost get their car banged on.
Oh.
You got to be obvious with your stop sign. You can't just walk
yes.
out there, you know, and very with a limp wrist, just go, oh, yeah, I'm holding the stop.
You
take
you have
control.
To make it, sure. I understand that. Well, that's the reason I bring it up. There is a guy that I've now been observing for about a year and a half.
Is this a side job? You're an observer?
I'm a cross guard observer. Yes.
Doing
the city
intel.
Of Evanston pays me on the side.
It's like a secret shopper.
Yes.
It's similar to secret shopper. Yes. So I have what they call cross section 8. That's mine. I'm at cross section 8. So there's a guy who starts out exactly as you described. Like if you're coming to that intersection, he points at you or your car, I guess, and he lets you know, hey,
you stop.
You cannot go.
Right.
There's kids.
That's
coming.
How you do it.
All right, but that's the way it starts. But then he gives up very early in. Like, as soon as the kids get to about a third of the way through the street, the cross
yeah.
part of the street.
He leaves the street?
He just puts the sign down because
oh,
he's
no,
holding
no,
a stop sign.
No.
And he goes back to his side, whichever his side is. And I always think, why does he have so much vigor at the beginning? Because he does. He gets your attention. He either holds out his hand or he points at you. You have to stop. But then as soon as the kids are just a little bit in, he's like, okay, okay, business as usual. He goes back.
That's when he needs to really stand in the middle of the street with the stop sign.
I think so, too.
Why bother at the beginning?
I don't know. I don't know why it changes so dramatically.
It's weird.
Like, you would think if he's not that into it, he should not that be that not into it the whole time. Or if he's that into it, because he starts out, it's like, believe me, I'm not going. You've given me the look. I'm here for the count. But then he's just like, ah, whatever.
There is a lady at an elementary school near our house who is pretty rough. I mean, I live near there, so a lot of times I make the stupid mistake of leaving my house when school's getting out.
Right, right.
And she is so strict. She will point. But here's the thing, too. As a driver, mm-hmm. I see a crossing guard. I make eye contact with them to see what they want me to do.
Oh.
But she points and, you know, stop to
right.
me. And then she'll point to somebody else and say, you go, you do. I mean, she is constantly
right.
moving. And she's in the whole center of a four-way intersection.
Oh.
So she never, like, leaves the kids alone.
Do you think they give the better intersections, the busy, tougher intersections to people like you just described? Like,
yeah.
They go, this is that's a true veteran. She
yeah.
knows what she's doing. Give her that one. I bet they do, right?
Yeah. And then another school in a different town, as I'm driving to work, I noticed the crossing guard, and my kids used to go to an after-school program because mm-hmm. we both worked, and it was called BASE, before and after school enrichment or something.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm looking at the crossing guard, you know, and she's strict, but she's nice about it. She does it with a smile.
Yeah.
I noticed that it was the woman... Mrs. W that used to watch my kids. So like all these years later, my kids are 19 and 16.
Yes.
And I see her, and it was just a moment that
oh.
she's still different district, but still with the school. And so now I wave every morning, and
yeah.
she's nicer to me
she
than anyone else.
You?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Mrs. W, she's going to know it's you.
She dealt with our kids. She'll remember us.
Tell me about this. At the crossing section that's right. All right. So during my route, there are two places where I am right by a school.
Mm-hmm.
The rest, I'm fairly close to schools.
But not through their crosswalks
or
anything.
Not at their busiest. Right. So the guy who's in charge of that particular crosswalk, he sometimes, because that's busy, because there's, you know, you got a whole group of kids coming. So he then decides arbitrarily when enough kids have taken the crosswalk.
Yep.
And then he'll let, like if there's 8 or 9 or 10 cars, even though there's a stop sign there, he just waves you through. And I always feel like I still should stop at the stop sign.
No,
I know he's waving me through, but I feel like the stop sign should have the final say.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Because he is, you know, a lot
of... He supersedes it, doesn't he?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. And I get that because there are a lot of super busy intersections that if you, you know, there are stragglers a lot of times.
Always.
So, yeah. So they make a group wait till it fills up a little bit so they can move the traffic. Otherwise,
right.
it's terrible.
It'd be over. It would take forever. But I always, and it's not just me, I see other people kind of sheepishly going through like, what if I get a ticket for this? Can I say that guy
yes.
told me it was okay?
Yes. And you won't get a ticket. If you're listening to the crossing guard, you're not going to get a ticket. If you don't listen to the crossing guard, that's when they are going to get your plate number and call you in.
Oh.
Got to be careful.
What an extreme high honor that must be to be have final word over a stop sign.
That's pretty impressive.
Could he also, if it was a stop light, could he also supersede the stop light, or is it just stop signs?
I don't know.
I'd be nervous to go through a stop. Even if somebody was waving me through, I'd be like, I don't know.
I don't think
this
he would wave me through. Because you're completely stopped. No, because I actually have gone by a school that there's a stop light there, and you never go against.
You can't go through that.
No.
Okay. All right.
You're just figuring this stuff out.
Yeah.
How long have you been driving?
Since I was 6.
How many phone books did you sit on?
You know what's funny is my dad used to take me when I was very, very little. We lived in an apartment, and my dad would let me, he'd put me on his lap, and he would let me steer through the parking lot into a parking space when I was like 3.
That's why you're such a great parker now.
But I would never do that. I mean, when my daughters
no,
were 3, that'd be the
either.
Last thing in the world. I mean, he controlled the gas and the brake. It was just me steering.
Right, and he was there in case of, you know.
Right.
He
but
could
still,
overpower you.
That seems
wrong.
Slightly dangerous to let a 3-year-old pull into a parking space.
And I remember when I took driver's ed, it was part of the high school curriculum. And it was, I think it was part of your gym class.
Yeah, it was at our school. It's not at all schools.
No,
but we
because
had that.
Now, like, it counts as an elective. So I let my boys take it to on outside places so they could have an elective that they chose to do in school.
Yeah.
And the driver's ed place says, okay, well, you know, give them, they're going to get their permit. They have to take a test for that. And before we start the behind the wheel, we want you to take him out and drive with him for a little bit. And I said, that's not how it works. You guys have the brake on the passenger side.
Right.
Why don't you do the behind the wheel and then we will drive with them prior to them getting their license?
Yeah.
That's not how we do it. I haven't taken Dylan out driving. I'm not doing it.
Just because of the fact that you feel safer knowing the brake.
He's not driven before that I'm aware of. Who knows? He probably does things when I go to sleep. But doesn't that seem odd? Like, isn't the behind the wheel so they learn how to deal with it while there's a brake there?
Yeah, I would rather have it go that way.
And they said, no, do about, you know, 15 hours or something, and then they can start the behind the wheel. I said, no, I don't want to do it that way.
At the place that taught my daughters how to drive, and again, their high school had nothing to do with it. They just said, no, we got too many kids at our school. You got to go off in your own, a private place. When I took driver's ed, parallel parking was a week. We had three different days.
They don't teach it at
all. They just didn't teach it. And I go, but you're going to need to know how to parallel
park.
More
than anything.
And they go, nah, the school just didn't think it was that important.
Michael didn't get taught that either.
That's but it's so important.
I know. I told you when my brother, the first time I drove a car, my brother goes, hey, do you want to go driving? And I'm like, do I? Oh, my God. And all I did was pull out of the driveway and back into the driveway.
That was it.
Pull out of the driveway, back in.
Yeah.
I'm like, can I drive on the streets? He goes, no, first you need to learn to control the car. I got to tell
He's
you,
right.
I'm a pretty great parallel parker, all thanks to him. But it was no fun that day. But that's all I did, in and out.
How could a driving school decide?
I don't know.
That's not an important element of driving.
And now they're teaching the Dutch Reach or whatever that is. What is that? Bertrand, you know that. It's a European thing where you reach over your opposite shoulder to open the door. What's that called again?
The Dutch look.
Oh, the Dutch look.
The Dutch look.
The reach.
Or the Dutch reach.
Oh, I was right.
Maybe I don't know what it
is. But they're going to be teaching that in driver's ed now, but not parallel parking?
Yeah, that's
what
crazy.
What the what?
I don't know. All right, we'll take a break. Look at all the calls. We're at 312-981-7200. We will get to those calls and texts in just a little bit.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we are talking about crossing guards. Bill, you had a very enthusiastic crossing guard at the beginning of his route.
He's
or
like
whatever.
This every day. He's got so much enthusiasm at the beginning of a cross. As kids are walking out into the intersection and cars are approaching, he very vehemently points at you or holds his hand up like, look, there's little kids. You got to be careful. Stay back. And then as soon as the kids get about a third of the way into the intersection, he puts down his sign, he puts down his hands, he just returns to ground zero, you know, whichever side of the street he starts at.
That's
just
not protecting them.
I think you got to go. Here's me telling a crossing guard how to do his job, but I think you got to go the whole route. You got to walk across with them and make sure no cars hit them.
It's a crossing guard. It's not a half crossing guard. You cross them.
Yes.
Ray, what's going on?
Well, my dad, about 35 years ago, he was a crossing guard in Byron on Highway 2. And kids loved him, and he loved the kids and that. He was retired. And he was out on a sunny day, and a gal that or her family ran the restaurant there in town that my dad frequented. And she just ran into him there. She didn't see him because the sun was shining in her eyes. And he went up on the hood and into the windshield and that.
Wow.
And fell down. But he was a tough old bird, you know. I mean, he just got back up and shook it off. And
wow.
Yeah.
Back to business. Was that the only time he got hit in all the years he did it?
Yeah, that was the only time he got hit. Yep.
Orange vest or bright yellow vest?
I'm not even sure if he wore a vest at that time. I know he had a stop sign, you know, but he might have had a vest back then. I don't know. That was a long time ago. But, yeah, it was quite the thing there. We were really shocked. I mean, he was beat up a little bit, but he wouldn't go to the hospital or nothing.
Wow.
Yeah, he was a retired carpenter, farmer, and what have you, and he was just a tough old bird, but I miss him, but he's gone now.
Ray, he got paid for that, right? That wasn't volunteer work, was it?
Yeah, he got paid. Yeah, okay. I don't think it was a whole lot back then, but yeah.
I don't think it's a whole lot now either.
You get commission.
Probably not.
Commission. Probably not. Yeah. For every kid not
every
hit?
Safe kid. Oh. Every time a kid crosses safely, you get a couple of bucks. Yeah. Well, thank you, Ray. Great story. Appreciate it.
Enjoy your show.
Thanks so much.
Someone has texted, they don't teach parallel parking because the new cars have the fancy technology that can parallel park the car by itself. So driving schools should be teaching students how to use the auto parallel park feature. They should teach me because it's on my car. It's on your car. Have you ever used it?
It's not on the car I have now. It was on, I had...
Did you ever use it?
No, I was afraid to use it.
Me too. Because that, if I understand correctly, we were just talking off the air, you learn how to parallel park, you pull very close, almost to the almost as close where your rear view or side view mirror is hitting the other car, you pull up so closely next to it and you back into mm-hmm. the spot mm-hmm. behind you.
That's what we were taught.
That's what we were taught.
Right.
And I think with the automatic thing, it does it for you like front ways, doesn't it? I don't think it...
I can't remember how it does it.
I never even tried it. I'm scared.
It's all voodoo. It's all witchcraft. I don't like it.
Also, they don't teach kids how to pull into a spot like at a strip mall. My daughter had an accident pulling into a spot at Woodfield months after getting her license.
Well, what would they teach there? You just see an open spot and you move into it.
And it's at a diagonal, so usually it's pretty easy to do.
Yeah, sure.
Although I will tell you, it can be very tricky if you're at Mariano's during, like right before a Super Bowl, or there is
so... Because of the in and out.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And, you know...
It's very busy.
Isn't it whoever started backing up first gets the right of way?
That's the way I've always thought, yeah.
People do not care.
Really?
People just, I was waiting for a spot and I was blocking a car and they just started back. Oh. I saw the reverse lights and they started moving. So, of course, I laid on the horn and scared them. But you got to look all around you.
Right.
Even if you have a camera, don't you still look around?
I have the camera that shows what's behind me, but that's my second line of defense. It's still, you know, physically turning around. Here's an interesting text. I'm 53, and I've never once... Did you see this?
Yeah.
I've never once parallel parked my car at 53. How do you... I guess if you live in a suburb or a more rural area, you're going to get away with it. But if you're in the city, you're going to have to at some point parallel park.
I lived in the suburbs most of my life. I never had to parallel park until...
Ever.
I started, working downtown and coming downtown.
Right.
And then I freaked out because I did not learn how to do it either.
Wow.
But once, I treat it as a challenge every, I almost like doing it because it's like, let's see if I can do it in one move, you know, back
Unless
in.
Unless there's people behind you waiting that, oh.
Yeah, but
so
you know what?
Hard.
Honestly, you got to put that out of your mind. If you're parking, I don't think you should be a road hog and bother people. But on busy streets like LaGrange Road where I live, sometimes you have to make people wait while you're backing into a spot.
But that's always part of the compromise is how much weight. I mean, if there's a bunch of cars stacked up behind you, you don't want to stop all traffic, especially if it's a bet. You never know when you're about to pass a parallel parker. Is this somebody who can get the job done in 5 seconds or am I going to be here all day?
Well, then you can pass them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, if it is a busy intersection and you don't know how to do it, drive around the block.
Right.
You know?
That's true.
And then this is kind of what Mary was saying. I used to be great at parallel parking when I lived in Chicago, but now I've been in the suburbs for 26 years and only parallel park occasionally and not very well.
Oh, you do fall out of practice if you don't do it often enough.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's a tough thing to do.
I got to teach my kids how to do it.
It's so crazy that a school would think it wasn't important. But I guess if their contention is in a couple of years, all cars will have that ability where you won't have to do it, I can kind of see that. But is that true? Will all cars have that capability?
No, but, well, not all people
not
have
cars.
New cars.
Right.
Some, you know, we have a 12-year-old car that doesn't have it.
Right.
No Bluetooth. I don't even know how we survive.
You're roughing it. That's awful. All right. A break, some news, and then Dane Neal will be by. We'll talk about the world of food with Dane Neal. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Look who's here. It's our friend Dane Neal, the host of On the Road with Dane Neal, which can be heard right here on WGN Radio Saturdays from 2 to 4 p.m. We haven't seen you in a while,
right,
Dane. Everything good?
With me, people.
Nice to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you. Here's the the irony, right? It's just screaming is that I was going to come in 2 weeks ago, but the car broke down. Yeah, right?
On the road with Dane Neal.
Literally on the
car
road.
It's me walking the walk. You know, people feel if it's not authentic, if you don't, you know, break down in the car, it's not just like, hey, you know.
So true. Everything's okay, though?
I mean, sure.
With the car, with you, everything.
Yeah, not your pocketbook, although you don't have a pocketbook, do you?
I don't carry pocket. I wear a Nomex driving suit at all times because you know what, Wendy? Fires can break out at any time. Stop, drop, and roll. Got to be prepared.
Solid.
It's a good point.
Very good point.
I felt like I saw you, though, because I've been listening to you on the weekends.
All right.
It's a great show.
All right. Well, this weekend, we're gonna, Mario Andretti is going to be on.
Yeah.
The Mario Andretti.
Well, actually, it's going to be Rich Little doing Mario Andretti, but he does a really good one and hits on pretty much all of the points. No, I'm just kidding. The real one. I didn't do like a 23andMe DNA test.
It must be cool to know that your name is synonymous. Like, I don't know if your wife ever did this, but if I'm driving too fast, my wife will go, hey, slow down, Mario. It's kind of cool to be the guy who inspired a name that's a word, you know?
That's built into like the corrective instructions of I don't, because you think about this, there are very few people that are ultimately and 100% synonymous with, you know, racing and racing success and all that kind of stuff. Everybody's got things that, you know, kind of don't define them, or maybe a little bit of this, but he's a guy that I think is known worldwide. He's as big as they get.
Oh yeah,
Mario, still Andretti. Handsome,
still handsome. Tell him Wendy said he's still handsome.
He would be happy to. Well, I don't know his particular situation currently, but I'm sure anybody would be happy to hear that. And he does. He's got a winery. He's still driving. He drives people all
around
the tracks.
Ask him a question for me.
Absolutely.
100%. Ask him if he's driving too slow. Does his wife go, hey, why aren't you in a hurry, Bill? Like the way my wife says, Mario.
Don't ask him that, Dane.
See if there's a
live up to your reputation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So for that, for him, it's like, why are you going so slow, Mario Andretti?
Yeah.
You know, how you gonna
see what he says?
He's 78.
Yeah.
That's fast.
But still kind of, you know, I mean, in an objective, you know, platonic way, he's a dashing guy. And this
totally.
He's been a great ambassador. And this is the 50th anniversary, if you can believe it, of him winning the Indianapolis 500. So he won the Indy 500, which is, you know, for the rest of your life, you're introduced as that. He also won the Daytona 500.
Wow.
Totally different fan bases. He got stock cars. He won the Formula One World Championship, which is the absolute, a lot of people would say, the hardest thing you can do.
Steve Bertrand won that.
He's won it twice, but that's it.
Yeah.
No Daytona 500 for Bertrand.
No.
And then he's won on everything, whether it's dirt or ovals or all that kind of stuff.
Well, tell him we said hello.
I will definitely do that. So we were going to talk until, of course, the unfortunate car incident.
Yeah.
We were going to talk a little bit about resolutions on the food side. And, you know, a lot of them, most everybody, I'm sure, has pretty much broken theirs by now.
People always say as the new year comes, this is the year I'm going to start eating healthier, only eating things that are good for me. And then, yeah, by now, most people have given up
on
that.
Maybe
I haven't started yet.
Not yet, Wendy?
No, I wanted to cook more at home, and I haven't begun that yet.
So
I haven't broken it.
Not yet.
And I think, too, Wendy, that's very smart, because you know what? I get in, it gets so crowded on the resolution side when everybody goes at once.
Sure.
You know, now you
pace
just
yourself.
There's no rules that you say.
Disappointment can come at any time during the year.
Yeah, let's stretch it into February, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you're disappointed by other things. So,
what are some food resolutions we
should do? Well, some of the ones that I had were just to, like, maybe drink, and I don't say this because this is against the kind of the brand model, but drink less beer and not at the wrong times. Don't eat so late. You know, try to, if you're going to, you know, do things that may be kind of heavy setting. Do that a little bit earlier in the day. That would be one of the things.
I don't drink during the week anymore. Can you believe that?
Is that true?
Mm-hmm. I believe it.
I mean, every once in a while, if I want a glass of wine or something, or if I have a party to go to, but typically I don't drink
that's
during
excellent.
The week.
If you have me hanging out with Roger Daltrey and...
That was from 2 years ago, but yeah, I was drinking.
They're coming back. They're going to be at Alpine Valley. That's my resolution.
Well, they're going to be in Tinley first. And then they're going to be in Alpine Valley. That's where you're going to go on the road to go see them?
We're going to take a road trip up there. You haven't had... Alpine Valley is one of the places. That was my summer job in college.
What a cool job.
I worked like backstage, the back gate. I worked most of the jobs, carted at the beer gardens for Alpine Valley. It used to be like there was stuff every single week, a few times a week. And for the last X amount of years, it's gone kind of dormant, right? Because of Lollapalooza, so many other venues closer to here, festivals.
And didn't they close for a while?
Last year, they didn't do rehabs.
what was it?
I was on drug related, but the
to rehab the place.
I think that's
I think that's what they said, but wow. I just don't think there was enough stuff going on. But now they've got quite a few. I think Jimmy Buffett's going to be up there.
The Dead was there. The remainders, Bob Weir.
Yep. They're going to be nice. So there's a bunch of things happening in Alpine Valley.
Very good.
That was not one of my resolutions, but it is now.
Go back to the resolutions. I'm sorry. What were you saying?
So here's some of the others. Expand the list of go-to meals for the week. So we have, and the kids are, they're the problem, really, and I think every parent would fit in this, is that they want a certain thing, they don't want a certain thing. Thought it myself.
You eat what we've made, but that's a hassle sometimes.
I don't want to say it never works, Wendy, because it can sort of work, but it's usually easy to go with the flow as long as it's something that's not unhealthy. But the kids have like four or five go-to things, and that's kind of what they'll eat like all the time. So want to try to like kind of mix it up a little bit and, get some recipes out there and make some different things. I know it's kind of a hassle, but the variety is there.
That'll come of that is, in your opinion, is what? Just a more well-rounded palate. Yes. You'll taste more flavors.
You're making me think that maybe it's just not worth it, because I'm thinking, really, right? What is the good?
My youngest, Dylan, tells me you make the same thing all the time, and I do. You fall into a rut, It's like pork chops. Mm-hmm. I make those a lot. Steak sandwiches. It's like the same thing. I make this chicken broccoli cheesy casserole.
That sounds really good.
It's good, but I do make the same things. I need some variety, and when I tried that HelloFresh, which I think I'm going to sign up for again, they did the beep and bop, and I'd never even heard of it before. Mm-hmm. And the kid, honestly, they loved it.
See, I think that's it. And if you can kind of, if you present it properly, I think the kids can really enjoy some of the different options. Bill, you're in the it's not broke, don't fix it category, right? Hey, this is fine.
I always find stuff that I like. There's never a time I don't.
But
people
don't
always
you,
go, you're a picky eater, but
you eat the same thing a lot.
I find things that I like, and I tend to gravitate toward them.
And there's nothing wrong.
There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. So here's the other side of it. You find things that you like. This is one of my resolutions, is to actually eat the leftovers, is to kind of, because we'll bring things home. Bill, I know you eat a lot of.
Yeah.
We'll bring things home, and we always bring them home, because obviously you don't want to just, we just have
to get lost in the refrigerator.
They just get thrown out like 3 days later. You don't necessarily eat them. So maybe find some different recipes, some ways to kind of either freshen them up or something like that, or figure out ways to actually, not waste the food.
Right. That's a good resolution, Dane. I like that one.
Yeah.
Another one. You got one more?
I got one more. And then donate to a food pantry. So if you're not going to eat it, just take those leftovers from wherever and bring them to a food pantry. I'm kidding, because they probably wouldn't take
that.
Them. But get involved with your local food pantry, whether it's the Greater Chicago Food Depository, whether it's the West Suburban one. We do a lot of stuff with them. So those are some of the resolutions. And we got some trends too. So if you
can you wait on the trends?
I can totally wait.
We'll take a little bit of a break. Dane Neal is here. If you want to talk to us, we're at 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Dane Neal's here. It's Bill and Wendy. Dane Neal's here. We're talking about food. Here's a text having to do with what we were just discussing. The text reads, teach your kids how to cook. Kids who are old enough should be helping with cooking and cleaning up their life skills for being adults. Now, we didn't teach either of our daughters to cook. They just kind of picked it up through watching cooking shows on television, and they both are pretty good cooks.
The education is there, and you'd be surprised. Well, maybe you wouldn't, but I kind of was surprised at how excited they are to get involved and do it. They are like so excited. If not only will they say, can I help,
mm-hmm.
but even if there's stuff that you have to, like, hey, who wants to break the eggs, you guys want to mix this, they're all about it. They will clamor to do that. And part of it is, there's this kind of familiarity. It's not so mysterious cooking yourself,
right.
and they see it as fun, which I was kind of surprised, because I think we grew up seeing it as work.
Sure.
It was a lot of work, and certainly if you had that passion for it, but kids see it as a lot of fun. And it's part of this, Bill, is one of the trends that's coming up in 2019, is more people will eat at home. Maybe not you. I know you're a big out to eat guy, but
I prefer to eat out or to get food, pick food up and bring it back to the house.
If your daughters like to cook, do they ever cook meals for you at home?
Sometimes. Yeah.
Is it anything you like?
Yeah. Yeah, they have their success rate is pretty good.
And you're not necessarily picky, but in my opinion, you're not very adventuresome with food.
Well, like I said, I have found foods from all over the world, not just local foods, but I love Asian food. That's my absolute favorite. And if you like it, why would you go anywhere else?
Because you might like something you never
tried.
Oh,
I know. I do from time to time. I surprise myself. Go on, Dane. What were you going to say?
Well, so that's it. So half of the people's dining expenses are spent eating out, yet 82% of the meals are prepared at home. It's just one of those things. And now, and millennials, like, they have no problem. They like to cook 4 days a week. You know, and they're, and of course, now the popularity of the meal kits, Wendy, you mentioned too, better supermarket prepared foods and all sorts of things. So there's a lot of, I don't know, that is sort of making it at home, but it's kind of a little help. Like you said,
sure.
If you're getting the food, sure, you're eating at home. If you bring it home, or if you get a meal kit, you're preparing it at home.
Right.
You've had, those are like training wheels, though, right? You have a little bit of help.
They are. It is Chicago Restaurant Week right now, or it's about to be Chicago Restaurant Week?
Well, Chicago Restaurant Week is coming up. It is going to be on, I think it's the 24th or 25th until February 7th. So it's actually 2 weeks.
Oh.
It's not
false advertising.
Right?
Game.
I think so, right? It's a little bit. But hey, you know, you get out there. This is one of those things that started 12 years ago. I don't want to take credit for it, but I'll contend. I did when I was doing
it. You were a big part of this.
Well, tiny, maybe, who knows? No one will admit this, but. There was did an interview for a nationally syndicated show. They did on Restaurant Radio America, and we talked with Washington had done. Other cities were doing it. Washington D.C. had done a Restaurant Week, and had talked with some of the people from the city, like, "Hey, you guys should do this." And then the next year, boom, Restaurant Week.
Yes. Here in
Chicago. I'm not saying anything. Who knows? Either way, it's grown now. 100 new restaurants involved this 100 year.
100 new restaurants since last year.
Just this year alone, 45. That's tremendous. In the suburbs, a lot of the ones, and I looked them up for you, Wendy, too, in the western suburbs. Most of them are kind of, you know, around sort of the Oak Brook area, mm-hmm. Yorktown and things like that. But 45 in the suburbs, 400 restaurants are involved in this, including when we've got some food. Piccolo Sonio and Tony Priolo will be on with us Sunday talking a little bit about it. He's been involved since the beginning.
Yeah.
And he's got, you know, Noninas, and Piccolo Sonio's gotten a lot of accolades. So you've got some of the top chefs, you know, those kind of name famous chefs in Chicago, all the way down to kind of fast food places.
Yep, something for everybody.
I would say.
What do you think happened that made it grow so much, not just over the years, but especially from last year to this year? Adding 100 restaurants in 1 year's time is no easy feat. What happened?
Well, I think it's a few different things. The components are, number one, it's a great opportunity. There's this huge list of great restaurants for people that are excited, curious. Unlike you, Bill, it's not broke, don't fix it. But for those people that are thinking, oh, I want to go to that place, you've got 24, it's got the prefix lunches and the prefix dinner. So $24 brunch and lunch, $36 to $48 on dinner. So you have an opportunity to get into some of these places at a discount, right? So it's cheaper than maybe it would normally be. You've got the opportunity to go ahead and kind of control what it is that you're having, see some new places, and then maybe you'll go back and experience it on the full side. You also have, you know, great causes. You know, you've got Pilot Light. We've had them in studio. They do so much for teaching kids and bringing chefs into the classroom, kind of like, you know, bringing the police officer, the fireman comes in, they bring the chefs in, and they not only talk about being a chef, but also teach, you know, science and math. And so you've got some great causes.
That's pretty cool. That's a fun way to have science and math taught.
Well, Paul Kahn is part of it, and Matthias Mergis and Jason Hamill, so some great chefs. And it's really thoughtful. It isn't like, hey, let's get into the school and just kind of hang out. Hey, we're chefs. Isn't that cool? They're building it into the science and math. And so they're actually building it into the curriculum. So much about cooking is about measurement, science, math, temperatures. You know, it's more than just, you know, the hat, right? Mm-hmm. You know, or whatever it is that you're doing. And they've done a great job into a bunch of the Chicago public schools. So it's going to support that. So that's great. And they've got their big event coming up. It's this is the first Bites Bash. And this is at the Field Museum. 70 or so of those restaurants and great chefs are going to be there as well. That's coming up on the 24th. And it's at the Field Museum. Whenever you can have an event at the Field Museum, that's pretty cool.
That's impressive. Yeah.
How did they
decide? Like, each restaurant, they provide like a partial sampling of their menu, right? They don't do full menu, do they? Or do they?
Well, they've got the kind of setups that they have. Typically, though, you'll have restaurants that will kind of share the best representation of what it is that they do. So for Piccolo Sonia, they won an award from Food Network for having the best, you know, spaghetti sauce,
so
best red sauce.
Have that.
So they're going to have that. Because here's what you're hoping for when the smoke clears, and it's businesses, right? Everybody in Chicago, the chef community is very communal. Everybody gets together and supports. But ultimately, you're hoping to really introduce yourself on this platform to so many new people who will get to know and love your restaurant. So
you want repeat customers.
Yeah, so there's, well,
right,
you just distill it. I say get to know and enjoy your repeat customers. Yes, right. Yeah. When you distill it down, that's kind of what it is.
Why does the chef community here get along so well? What's going on there? That's very peculiar. Most businesses are so cutthroat, but for some reason in this business,
it is hard to put your finger on it. It's one of those things that I don't know that the code has been cracked, and it's so different from what you would say is the leading place as far as the example of a restaurant town, New York City, where it's very catty, it's very competitive. Right. If you had a fire at your restaurant, Barry Sorkin from Smoke just had a fire there, and everybody was like racing to try to figure out how to help him when the different places have fires or people help out with labor. I don't know what it is. I think we're nicer here.
Is that what it is, Wendy?
Are we nicer? Well, I think that everybody feels like there's enough that the restaurant community as a whole is enough of a draw where there's, you know, and better, I think, stronger as a group maybe than just one or two different restaurants. We remember back when it was just Charlie Trotter's, you had one place, or, you know, you think about, well, okay, Rick Bayless and Frontera and all that kind of stuff in the last 10 years or so. I think there's just been so much. It's such a draw for great talent and certainly such a draw for great food, too.
Yeah. Excellent. I broke this news to you when you walked in, but you weren't aware of this. This restaurant, Mama's Boy, here in Chicago, just closed. I know it because it's got my... I've never eaten there, but I pass by it all the time.
I guess you're not alone because it closed.
Favorite name of any restaurant in town.
That is good.
Mama's Boy. I love the name of it. So we don't know the history of why it went down. They always seem to be crowded every time I pass by there.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons for that. Even if it is crowded in places, this is the one in River North. I mean, it's very expensive. You get the rents. You have all that kind of stuff. Part of a restaurant group could be part of something else that's going on. But
I know the restaurant Boltwood in Evanston? Because we had heard Heckies. Good things. Now, Heckies is down the street from it a little bit. We ate at Boltwood a couple of weeks ago. We'd been trying to get in for months, and we finally got a seat. So we get in there. It's great. We love everything about it. They announced 3 days later they're closing.
Oh, you're the kiss of death.
The owners just said, yeah, we're fed up. We've been doing it. We're making money. We enjoy what we're doing, but it's just too much work.
Who would do that? It's like when Hot Dogs closed. You're like, well, what? That makes no sense.
Get someone going good.
If you don't want to do it, hire someone to be the hot, you know, to man the counter or whatever.
They had a drink there at Boltwood called the Tom Skilling.
Wow. What?
Isn't that cool?
Yes.
Yeah.
It sounds like a good forecast for success. But here's one idea.
Hey, Neil, ladies and gentlemen. Two shows on Saturdays.
That may be there. Is maybe it's kind of a gravitating towards sensitivity. Mama's Boy closes because we all know, you know, the Panty Waist, the restaurant closed.
Right.
Like, hey, you Four Eyes, shut
down.
All the
negative. They have a chain of restaurants with all negative sounding
names. All those old-time insult restaurants are on hard times.
Right. So true. Dane, great to see you. Listen to Dane Neil on Saturday from 2 to 4. His
Mario
show is called
Andretti.
On the Road with Dane Neil. Mario Andretti will be back.
And
more than that.
Yes, I just 2 hours of
Mario and more.
Wow. Who can deal with it? All right. Thank you, Dane. Appreciate
it. Yep.
A quick break and then more of us, Bill and Wendy, on WGN.
I'm going to get my drink on. I'm going to hear me a sad song. My baby just left home. I didn't treat her right.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's 720 WGN, and it's time to have a little history lesson. And I'd like to welcome in Professor Onesti, Ron Onesti, CEO and President of the Onesti Entertainment Corporation. Ron, how's it going with you?
It's so good to talk to you guys again. And let me just say something to preface all of this. You know, it's so nice to hear something so comforting as the voice of Orion Samuelson. Mm-hmm. He's like the Malto meal in the morning that we all grew up with. It's still happening. I mean, really, to hear his voice, it's such a familiar thing, you know?
And speaking of Malto meal and Orion, he provides the same amount of nutrients and vitamins and iron as Malto meal. Did you know that?
You know, he comes across as very maple-y to me.
Yeah, it's a little bit maple-y.
I'm with you.
Yep, so true. Ron, congrats on the new place over by me at Evanston. How's business over there at Rockin' Ravioli?
Oh, you know what? Yeah, Rockin' Ravioli. You know, I combined my recipes and my music and put together Rockin' Ravioli. It's been very, very cool, and people are loving it. You know, another part of it is on the second floor, just like we do at the Arcata Theater. We've opened a 1920s themed speakeasy, of course, up there. It's you know, it's like a jazz club, but it's over 200 antiques. It's very, very cool. And the whole Speakeasy X concept actually really came forth because we were open in September 6, 1926, right in the middle of Prohibition over at the Arcata Theater. And as we were celebrating our 90th anniversary a couple years back, I wanted to do something to really underscore that whole the feel of the 1920s. And that's why I opened up that speakeasy there, and it's been amazing. And as I'm doing some of my research of things, and I'm always looking for different angles from a marketing standpoint and decor standpoint, realized that today, January 16th, 1919, the Volstead Act was ratified and officially beginning prohibition in America.
All right, so alcohol was legal, and then all of a sudden they just said, no, we can't. You can't manufacture it, you can't sell it, you can't imbibe it. That's what happened?
Well, it was actually continued to be manufactured. What they wanted to do is they wanted to control how it was being used from a medicinal standpoint and from other, you know, there are several uses for alcohol in the chemical world and just in different uses, household uses, that kind of thing. So they wanted to come up with a way to monitor and control that. And obviously they wanted to stop the drinking of alcohol. And so it was ratified on this day 100 years ago, but when you talk about prohibition, they say it started in 1920. Well, that's when it went into effect. They waited a whole year. You know, it's not like they pass a law today and then tomorrow, you know, everything's illegal and let's go shut all the bars. So they let them operate for about another year or so until December of 1920, and that's when prohibition officially went to effect, where it was illegal to drink and to manufacture alcohol without certain permits.
So what happened? Did all the bars close and then only these little speakeasies are where people could sneak underground and have a drink?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what happened. I mean, a lot of the breweries tried to find other ways of utilizing their companies. A lot of them went under. You know, the official ones anyway went under. Some were making it for places out, you know, outside of, and that's why too they were trying to make some liquor to send across on the ships overseas, and that's why they wanted to monitor that. But some were just went to making soft drinks, some went to making other chemicals, some went to making root beer, that kind of thing. You know, that was being sold in many of the pharmacies at the time. You know, they started the soda fountains with Coca-Cola, obviously. So you know, that's basically what happened. They shut down the bars or the liquor aspect. I mean, you know, keep in mind the bars weren't as prevalent. I mean, it went from the 1800s, late 1800s, the whole saloon thing.
Right.
But in the big cities, it was more about you know, a restaurant bar kind of a thing. I mean, the local saloons, the local taverns, actually, we call them what they were called back then, and still went all the way into the 1970s. The whole concept of taverns, you know, was what they were shutting down, and that's where a lot of those locals became these little restaurants, and they would, you know, offer liquor in a hidden situation. They would bring people down in their basements. They would bring people. Many of the taverns were extensions of tavern owners' homes. You know, they had a little piece of their home, a garage, or they built on a small little addition to their home there that became a tavern. So they'd literally invite people back in their homes to imbibe.
Wow.
So it was a very underground situation, but that's when, you know, so many people. And, you know, it's interesting because if you look at the history, that things like martini shakers, for example, you know, if you're in the martini shaker manufacturing business, your biggest time in your company's career was during Prohibition. They were making more martini shakers at that time. So, you know, it just shows you there's over 100,000 speakeasies in Chicago. Think about that. 100,000. Yeah, it was nuts.
That's like,
and
that's like Starbucks. So
well,
it's the same exact number
of
Starbucks. What was the mood in the country at the time, Ron? I mean, I saw what happened here a year ago when they put a soda pop tax into place. People went crazy. What was it like when people were told they can't have whiskey and beer anymore?
Well, you know what? Obviously, it was a big deal. President Woodrow Wilson actually vetoed the act at first, but the Congress and Senate they overturned it, and so the people were obviously very, very much against it, and a lot of the mob was against it at first, believe it or not, because they were already making their end on things. You know, they're strong arming people and still making their end, but then
they figured out how to make more money because of it, right?
Well, then they realized, like, okay, now we become, you know, the liquor industry.
Yeah.
And that went out of control. I mean, Al Capone was making $2 million a week. And that's in the 1920s.
Think of that.
That's pretty good money.
It was unbelievable.
Wow.
Well, you don't need $2 million to get the specials that are going on today as we celebrate the 100-year anniversary of the ratified 18th Amendment leading to the complete prohibition of intoxicating liquors in the country. But if you go to Club Arcata Speakeasy and Restaurant or Bourbon and Brass Speakeasy, one in St. Charles, one in Evanston, you can go to oshows.com. What kind of specials will we see as we celebrate this day in history?
Well, you know what? I've never been a real bourbon drinker, frankly, until I opened up these speakeasies and realized really just what a wonderful thing bourbon is and how there's such a variety and such a range of flavors. And, you know, when all the liquor companies are coming in with their wares and trying to sell me on things, I learned a lot. So because of that, I bought a lot of different flavors of bourbons, whiskeys, and scotches, and even gins, which obviously was the beverage of choice back then, the bathtub gin. And we've got over 100 bourbons over in St. Charles. Jeez. And over 60, almost actually, I think we're approaching 70 different ones in Evanston. So tonight we're doing half price on all our drinks. We've got some that are, you know, we've got one that's $800 a bottle, and we got, you know, some that are, you know, $20 a bottle. So you can taste different ones. It's all half price tonight in both places. And you know what? If you're somebody who really just enjoys drinking, you know, just somebody, you enjoy social drinking, you have your whole life after 21 years of age, of course, and it's something you share with your family, your wife or husband, today's a good day, 100 years to the day, to kind of do a quick shot, a toast to the concept of social drinking.
Love it. Ron, thank you so much. Check out his speakeasies, Club Arcata or Bourbon and Brass, and check out all the unbelievable rock and roll and other type of music acts that come through at the Arcata. Love what you're doing. Go to oshows.com. Ron, thank you so much.
You guys are my rock stars. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. He always makes me blush.
Yeah,
oshows.com. Remember, you can always join us on the stream at 12 noon today. You can go to WGNplus.com, WGNradio.com, and look for it. We're on, it's our bonus hour.
Yeah, the bonus hour runs from 12 noon to 1 o'clock. Today, we have a very, very special surprise mystery guest joining us.
Oh, right, we do.
John Williams.
Don't tell them.
People will be so surprised that it is John Williams. Spoiler alert. Did you see, Wendy, the story about Karen Pence? She is the wife of Vice President Mike Pence, who
the
you may remember
lady.
From Johnny Quest, where he played Race Bannon. He looks just like Race Bannon.
Johnny
Quest fans know what I'm saying. All right, so Karen Pence is a school teacher. She teaches art. She just got a job at a school in Springfield, Virginia, called the Emmanuel Christian School. It's a private school, K-8, kindergarten through 8th grade. And it has now been learned that in order to work at this school, you must sign an agreement, which basically says, they call it a moral purity agreement. So what it says basically is you won't do anything outside of marriage, that you won't have any sort of homosexual affair or encounter. There's several things that it insists that you not be a part of, and you must sign this agreement before getting employed at this particular school. It says here that it is a pledge to live a personal life of moral purity, like I said. Here's what the agreement says that she signed. I understand that the term marriage has only one meaning, the uniting of one man and one woman in a single exclusive covenant union, as delineated in the scripture. A man and a woman are married to each other. It then goes on to say, moral misconduct which violates the bona fide occupational qualifications for employees include, but are not limited to, such behaviors as the following. So essentially they're saying, by signing this agreement, you're agreeing to not participate in these things, or participate in these things, depending on how they word it. Heterosexual activity outside of marriage. This includes premarital sex.
I'm out.
Cohabitation.
I'm out.
Wendy, you're actually mentioned by name in this a couple of times in the next few paragraphs. You may also not participate in any extramarital sex. So no sex before marriage, No sex outside of marriage.
Or during.
During marriage. It says you may not you may not participate in any homosexual or lesbian sexual activity, in any polygamy, in any transgender identity, any other violation of the unique roles of males and females, any sexual harassment, any use of viewing, this is interesting, any use or viewing of pornographic material or websites.
I'm out again.
You're out. And sexual abuse or improprieties toward minors as defined by scripture and federal or state law. So some of these, there's a couple of these, like that last one about improprieties toward minors.
Oh, you agree with.
That's fine. But the rest of it, it seems a little much.
And it sounds like something that I wanted to say, when was this written, in the 1800s? But the verbiage, right, but the verbiage now is something, like how can a school have something like that?
Right. Even if, I mean, you know, when you're hiring somebody, you don't want to hire somebody, like they mention extramarital affairs and stuff like that. Okay, I get it. But to put it in writing is a little bit much, right?
Yeah, I just don't understand how this can be.
Very surprising.
It is. And she signed it?
Yeah, the criticism is over that exactly. Is she knowingly signed it. She read it. She signed it.
Now, listen, I know we need jobs and stuff, but I mean, if you're a teacher, yeah, can't you pick and choose a little bit?
You would imagine, right? Now, people have said, I know this story came out yesterday. This story broke yesterday. So people were saying, well, they're a very religious family, the Pence family, and that's fine.
That's their business.
There's nothing wrong with that. But wouldn't you have a hard time? I've only had one time in my life where a company was interested in me, and they threw some ideas my way. It was a radio station, and they said, we hear the owners of the station have very specific beliefs about certain things. And I said, like what? And they told me what they were. It had to do with abortion. It had to do with gay rights. It had to do with owning guns, and on and on and on. And they and I disagreed on everything but one. I can't remember what the one thing was we agreed on, but the rest of them. And I said, I got to be honest. I can't pretend or sign something that says that I believe a certain way if I believe a different way. We're both losing in that, aren't we?
That's very big of you.
Well, it cost me a job.
I know, and you needed one.
I didn't want to go on the air and pretend that I believed in things that I didn't believe in. But
and I know that Karen Pence agrees with this for the most part.
I have to think,
because I know her husband certainly does.
That's what I was about to say. I don't know all of her beliefs, but Mike Pence has been very well spoken about exactly what he believes and doesn't believe in, and my guess is she's of like mind. I'm guessing, but still.
But now here's my question, and this is a big one, and we're going to run out of time before we can get an answer. But isn't this, like an equal opportunity employer, isn't this illegal to have this type of thing?
I think if you're a private institution, and they are,
I guess.
A private school, I'm almost positive that they have the right to make up their own bylaws for who they do and do not employ. If it was a public school, I don't think they could do that. But a private school seems like there's a little more or less wiggle room, depending on which side you're coming into it. And they also don't allow wiggle room.
Well, that's a given. All right. I know someone who also signed something similar in the state of Tennessee. This from 815. Was not allowed to have alcohol at her wedding reception either. I'm out again.
You know, I'm sure you're aware of this. At this station where we work right now, at WGN, and at several stations prior to this, you sign, there's like, I don't know what they worded it as, but it's like
code of conduct?
Yeah.
It's due by Friday, by the way.
I can't find mine. You signed something saying, now they're very vague on what is and is not morally allowable.
You have a good idea.
Yeah, everybody has a pretty good idea.
You don't want to embarrass the company where you work.
Of course not.
And
yet we do on a daily basis.
Well, yeah, but
2 hours plus the bonus.
It's not illegal.
Right.
What we do.
Right.
But some people, you know, will do illegal things and then they're surprised that they get fired.
Right.
Like, I didn't do it on work time. Well, yeah, but you're representing the company. And
right. But there is a morals clause in, I think, every contract I've ever signed with every radio station, but they're extremely vague on what exactly that encompasses.
Right. So they
maybe
can make
the
up
better.
Better for them, because they can say morally to us,
right,
your stupid show does not work.
Yeah.
So we should get that changed next contract.
Immediately.
All right. We are going to join. Actually, we're not going to join. We're on the stream. We're going to do that at noon. And coming up on 7:20, the Stories That Matter with Eric Rung. It's from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN.